for joining us for another episode of Divorce Confidential. I'm Michelle DeLino, family law and divorce attorney with DeLino Law Group in the Seattle Bellevue area.
And I'm Amy Alpeza. I'm a certified real estate divorce specialist. I work with Windermere Real Estate all over the Greater East Side and Seattle. And we're here today to talk to you about some big no-nos that when you're going through a divorce that you do not want to do in regards to your financial and personal property. So
let's do it. Let's dive right in. So what not to do, right? Like everybody always wants to know, what do I do? How do I get through divorce? I think sometimes it gets overlooked, the things that you should not do in divorce, the pitfalls to avoid and the mistakes that a lot of people make. And you've been through divorce, I've been through divorce, and we all know there's a lot of emotional ups and downs, but don't cut your spouse off the bank accounts. Don't cut off their cell phone. Don't do that stuff, right?
Right. Well, and you know, I think in divorce, finances are probably the biggest, you know, or second to parenting plans, but just one of the biggest questions that clients have when they come to us is they're scared about finances. They're scared about the other person draining their bank account. And so they operate from this place of fear, or maybe they're trying to punish the other person, but just trying to take control of the finances. And what that does is it causes so much conflict between you and your spouse. And so one thing, which I know, Michelle, we're going to get into, but is the legalities of it, right? So what if one spouse, you know, you've got a joint bank account and one spouse decides, hey, I'm either going to close this bank account or I'm going to take all the funds out of this bank account. Like how, what happens? Mm-hmm. What happens
yeah,
to the person?
You literally can't do that. And I mean, at least in most major counties, in King County, which is obviously Seattle, Bellevue, and a lot of other areas, in Snohomish County, which is the whole north end. In Pierce County, there is not an automatic order, but most people get one and it still looks really bad. So what I mean by why you can't do that is this: when you file for divorce, there is what's called an automatic temporary financial restraint that goes into place. And what it says is nobody can close any accounts whatsoever. No one can make any changes. No one can remove anyone from accounts, and no one can make large withdrawals that are outside of the course of ordinary business and living. So you could withdraw money if you need to pay your rent. You can, and also legal fees are included. So you could withdraw money to pay your attorney because you're going through divorce. You could withdraw money to make a minimum credit card payment. What you could not do is take all of the money out of your joint savings account and put it in your own. What you could not do is take your ex off the account and close the account. What you cannot do is decide you're going to pay off your entire credit card with the community account. Those are things you literally can't do because the automatic temporary restraint that is in place says don't do it. So if you do, what do you do? Well, you probably need to seek to hold that person in contempt. And that means they're in contempt of the order that was already issued. So what I do when that happens to my clients is I either call the other person up, send them an email, send their attorney an email and say, hey, look, your client just violated this. I'm going to give you till the end of today to put the money back, fix it, do whatever you need to do. And if not, I'm putting you on notice that guess what? We're going to court tomorrow and getting an order that's going to require your client to show up and say why they did that and hold them in contempt. So there's recourse for that stuff.
Well, and that's really great information, but what happens if they've already spent that money, or if let's say they put it on their credit card, you know, they paid off a credit card.
Bill,
you can't take that money back.
No, a great question, because that happens a lot. You can't be like, put it back if you just paid $30,000 to a credit card. So what happens in that case is document it by saying, this is what happened. Go to, if they can't fix it or they won't fix it, sometimes people are just like, no, go and see if you can get a contempt order, because you're going to want that later on in the case. And if you don't want to do that, you sometimes could get the other party to say, okay, I screwed up, have it in writing. And then we call it what we do, what's called making it subject to reallocation in settlement. So if you go to settle a case and somebody spent $30,000 they shouldn't have spent already, we're taking that out of what they get at the end. So that's another way you can deal with it. We reallocate that money to them already in settlement, but sometimes that doesn't fix the damage that's been done. So sometimes you want to have them held in contempt, especially if you think your case is going to be really high conflict. It's good to be able to tell the court, look, they did this once, they can't be trusted. So, you know, the big remedy though, I think that you're asking about is what do you do? Well, you can make it work out in the end. It's essentially, divorce is very often a math problem. So if someone spent money already, that's going to be subtracted from what they can get later.
Got it. Okay. That makes total sense. I think, you know, for some of our listeners, and we've talked about this too, is like, not everyone is in a position of financial wealth, right? To where they're going mm-hmm. through divorce, funds might be limited. What do they do if someone has completely spent all the money that is in their savings account or, you know, their checking account? Are they just basically left high and dry, if you will, until, you know, the end of the case, until, well, their divorce is settled? Or,
well, if that happens, like early on in the case, even if you don't have an attorney, you should try and seek contempt on your own. If you do get an attorney, attorney fees for contempt, if someone's found in contempt, attorney fees are mandatory that they pay your fees. So that's one good thing to know. You might just need to borrow money from friends or family. Contempt can also have a remedy where it's like, okay, you need to, maybe someone put all this money towards a credit card, but you're separated. Your husband now or your wife now needs to, the court might order them to give you X amount of money to get you through. Also, getting a temporary order for temporary support is super important if you think this is going to happen. And temporary support means, hey, my case just started out and it's not going to be over anytime soon, but I need temporary child support, or I need temporary spousal support, and I'm scared that all of a sudden the money's going to be gone. Getting a court order and getting some help to do that early on can give you a new status quo during your case and make sure that you have money. So here's the flip side of that. You don't want to be that person that did what we call engaging in self-help. Like, I can't tell you how many times I've had clients be like, oh, he shut me off of the cell phone account and now I can't get my phone number back. Or he might be like, oh, she closed the bank account and didn't tell me. And now my, you know, direct deposit is all screwed up and I'm not going to get it for like a month. If you're the person that does that and you end up in court because that other person held you accountable, it looks terrible. The court is not only upset because you violated an order, but they are really upset because you felt like for some reason it was up to you to do this. It just looks so bad. Don't be the person that does that.
Could a judge then, if your case did go to trial, could a judge then rule against you or, you know, unfavorably on your settlement if you did pull something like that? Like, could they rule a higher amount for your spouse if you did decide to, you know?
Yeah. They could find that you were what we call intransigent, which basically means like you acted in a way that was in bad faith during the case. And sometimes, I mean, judges are people too, right? And they're going to know about it. It's going to come up in your trial and you might get more attorney fees because you drove up the whole cost of the case because that person was super high conflict. And they're never going to forget that you're the one that, you know, locked your wife and children out of the house, or you're the one that cut off their internet access or something, or left them without power for 2 days while you made them change the account over. Those things don't go away, and they can be a reason too. If you piss somebody off enough, maybe you had a case where your assets were going to go 50-50. Maybe they're not. Maybe just 3% more or something is going to go the other party. And we kind of call that like an asshole tax, for lack of a better term. I mean, that happens. Like, that's real life stuff that happens. So don't be the person that is remembered for, you know, locking, you know, or making sure that, like, you know, the car payment didn't get made and the car got repossessed. Cause I've had that happen too, even though they could clearly afford it. Car payment doesn't get made. Car gets repossessed. Wife comes out to drive kids to school and there's no car. I mean, don't be the person where that story gets told at trial. No. Like, especially when you're making $500,000 a year working at Microsoft, you know? Wow. So
I can't believe people do that. But you know what? Divorce is one of those situations. Like, people do things that they probably never thought that they would ever do. And in that situation. So yeah, that would be scary. But hey, one thing, talking about, you know, cars, but have you ever had cases where one spouse will take the other spouse off of car insurance and then there's been an accident and they don't know about it?
Yes. And that stuff is terrible. The automatic temporary financial restraint says you can't do that either. You can't change insurance policies, just like you can't say, oh, I'm sick of paying the health insurance premiums. Most employers won't let you do this anyway, but some people will be like, I don't want to pay the health insurance premiums and they're on my insurance. I'm going to take you off. You cannot do that. You can't be like, oh, I'm tired of covering that person's car insurance. I want them to pay their own and then take them off. I've actually had that happen in a case where someone took the other party off, and then there was an accident, and they didn't know until they got in an accident they were uninsured. And that is a really, really, really big no-no. You cannot do that. If you want the other party to pay for half of the insurance, or you think they should have to, that's where those temporary orders I was talking about came in. In temporary orders, the court can decide while your case is pending who's going to pay what bills. So if you're the person that's like, oh, I'm paying the medical insurance, I'm paying the car insurance, everything's under my name, so I'm paying the utilities, and the other party could or should be affording to pay for some of it, you don't want to take that into your own hands and just be like, heh, I'm going to cut the car insurance. You want to get a temporary order that says, I pay these bills, you pay those bills. So something like that doesn't happen. That's a great question.
And so you keep referring to temporary orders. Can you just get our listeners caught up on what temporary orders
what exactly that means
are? Yeah.
Yeah. So when you start a case, this is a big misconception people have. When you start a case, like, nothing really happens. You file for divorce, that establishes whatever your date of separation was. And that's really it. And then the clock starts ticking, but nobody has to pay anybody anything. It's totally up in the air, you know, who's paying what bills, and things can be in chaos. Temporary orders are kind of just what they sound like. They are orders that go into place temporarily that decide who's going to pay, you know, what the family bills are, maybe who's going to live somewhere in the house and who's not going to live there, who's going to drive and pay for what car, who's going to pay temporary spousal support if it's needed, who's going to pay temporary child support if it's needed. You basically get a set of orders in place that are temporary. They're not necessarily final, but they help stabilize your new situation. So it doesn't happen automatically in every case. You need to actually petition for it. And there's a whole process behind that, but it's something that's really important. And it deals with a lot of this, don't be the jerk that turned off the cell phone stuff. If you want the other party to pay for their phone, then you need to get an order saying that. Otherwise, if it's in your name, it's on you until the divorce is over. A lot of people don't understand that. They're like, oh, it's not fair because everything's in my name and everything comes out of, you know, my account. Well, if that's the way it's always been, that's what's going to happen unless the court says otherwise until your case is over. So temporary orders is really what creates like a new temporary normal for people while they try to navigate like this insane world of divorce, I guess is the best way to put it.
Got it. Okay. That was a great explanation. And I think, you know, that's a topic for, I think temporary orders could be a topic for our next.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's a whole topic for another day. A lot of people out there, I don't know how many people I see are Googling, you know, what are temporary orders? How do I get temporary orders? So we could talk about that for a long time, another time. We'll definitely bring that up in the future. Yeah, good point.
So are there any other things that in regards to finances that are big no-nos? So we talked about, you know, not removing insurance, not changing insurance, you know, not stopping payment for cell phone, internet, et cetera. Are there any other big financial no-nos? Obviously not draining the bank account, moving large sums of money. So what if you don't have financial orders in place, but you do some of these things? Is there anything?
If you do some of these things, here's the thing. If anybody's filed for divorce and it's in King or Snohomish or a lot of other counties, you do have an order. You don't even have to get it. It's automatic. So you can't do anything. And if you do, then you're in contempt. Here's what I would say is another big no-no is just as far as money goes, don't waste your time and money being that person that wastes attorney's fees fighting over personal property. Like Amy, you deal with real estate and we know that real estate is it's worth fighting about, right? It's the biggest asset people have. About it, you know, that's fine. Fine. If we have to decide how much the house is worth, who's going to keep it, that's stuff that's worth getting into. But don't be the people that are fighting over a 70-inch plasma TV versus an HD TV versus who keeps the lawnmower, who gets the, you know, the kitchenware or the knife block. And I'm not kidding. People fight about that stuff. And I know that stuff is super emotional, but don't be the one that fights about it. Let it go if it comes down to it, because you'll spend more money fighting about it than you will even dealing with it. I always bring this up, and I may have even mentioned it other times. I had this one case where I was sitting, this is back when we actually went to mediations before COVID, and I was sitting downtown in a mediation, and the case was, the property was divided, the real property was divided, the retirement was divided, but we were sitting there fighting over this collection of movie posters for like an hour and a half, and like these Star Wars movie posters and all this stuff, and it's stuff, and So between the two attorneys in both rooms and the mediator, these people were spending over $1,000 an hour to fight over like some posters. And I can't even tell you how, and we were all saying this is ridiculous, but they were letting their emotions get in the way. And that's what happens with stuff. When it's a big asset, like the home, by all means, let's figure out it's worth spending some resources on, right?
Yeah.
It's not worth it. You can replace that sofa no matter how much you liked it. I mean, you can, you know, unless it's personal mementos, which really is never something that's up for debate. It's always the things like who gets what TV or who gets like indoor or outdoor furniture or who gets, you know, whatever. And personal property is not worth it. It's also a good opportunity to tell you, don't be that person that thinks you're going to get like a large value for the other person keeping the property. So a lot of the time I'll see like on a spreadsheet or somebody will say, oh, well, I should get $30,000 in credit because they're keeping almost everything in the home. And I'm okay with that. And you do that as a way of trying to drive up your property. Don't do that, because the reality is the court will take that restoration hardware sofa that you paid $5,000 for, and they'll say it's worth $250. You get garage sale value.
Wow. That's
so
crazy.
Don't fight over it. Like, don't. Yeah. It's even if you think it's worth, you know, $5,000 for that ottoman that you got, and it's all like leather and custom, it's worth like $75 if you're in court. No one gives a crap about it. So don't fight over it. And it also looks really bad too. It just, it's a bad look.
It looks petty, right? So but that's some great advice for sure. I think, you know, I always try to tell clients that same thing. It's like, think about how much it's going to cost you in legal fees. Is it worth it to actually take this to your attorney versus just, you know, biting the bullet, you know, giving it up? It makes you look better. And guess what? You get new furniture, right? Like, you don't have all those bad memories associated or whatever, you know? So
I got to just throw out there, I had this case not that long ago where people were fighting over, I guess it's kind of like a Casper mattress, but it's called a purple mattress. And they're
like
not even that
bucks.
Yes, it's not even expensive. And I'm like, it's a used mattress. And I'm kind of like, don't you want a new bed? You're getting divorced. Like, are we really sitting here fighting over this purple mattress? Like, that literally happens. I didn't even know what a purple mattress was until then. And then I looked it up and I'm like, this is absolutely ridiculous.
Oh my
like,
God.
Just don't do it.
So funny. Yeah, no. As soon as I got divorced, I got all new furniture. Seriously.
Right? Don't you want new furniture? Yeah, like fresh start. I mean, and you don't have to get, it's another thing too. People get really freaked out a lot of the time about divorce because they think one household, like one household budget now has to sustain two houses. And that's true for a while. Have to get super expensive stuff when you move out. You will be surprised how much better that sofa that you got like at IKEA, how much better it feels having that and knowing that it's yours and you got it on your own and it's never been in your marital house.
Right.
You feel so much better with those things than you will like stressing. So don't stress about what you have, just stress about the fact that you have your happiness and sanity. Like that's the best tip I think we can ever give people, right?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, in every situation, right? Every topic.
Yes.
It's just, it's so much better to be happy, calm, you know, get rid of the anxiety. And so, anyway, so today I hope you guys took some good, notes and maybe took a couple of tidbits from the advice that Michelle gave today and just some things not to do, some things to do. Obviously, if you have any questions around it, you should consult your, attorney or reach out with questions, but yeah. Thanks for joining us today. We really appreciate you guys being here, and we'll see you next time.